Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress. Well, the latest polls have Democrats in a dither. They show Hillary Clinton's lead over Donald Trump narrowing, sometimes to just a couple points. And then you've got some right-wing polls by Fox News and others that actually show Donald Trump ahead with a large amount of people undecided. The worst poll for Hillary Clinton shows her behind 46 to 42%. That's the Fox News poll, and one least likely to be trusted, with at least 12% of voters undecided. Most polls show her, say, 2 points ahead, 41 to 39 is probably the average of the polls, showing 20% undecided. And a lot of Democrats are nervous, and we should be. After all, the alternative to Hillary Clinton is Armageddon. Oh, Donald Trump. Same difference. Same difference. Economic catastrophe, nuclear war. The irony is, I don't think I'm exaggerating much. After all, Donald Trump is not only a racist, xenophobic, at least according to his ex-wife, a rapist. She swore in a deposition that he forced her to have sex with him. I'll read some of those details a little bit later on. She's recanted, which means that either his ex-wife is a perjurer or Donald Trump is guilty of sexual assault, not to mention being someone who really doesn't know anything about public policy, changes his views every few moments, lies like a rug, claims Ted Cruz's father is killed Kennedy, claims that Vladimir Putin, that's his best friend because Putin once used a Russian word to describe him as colorful that Donald Trump thought meant brilliant. I can go on and on and on and on. Given the weirdness that is Donald Trump, why isn't Hillary farther ahead? I mean, I think if Ted Cruz or Jeb Bush were Hillary's opponents right now, I have to tell you, I think the results would be similar. Obviously, I disagree with Ted Cruz's and Jeb Bush's policies for the most part. Donald Trump, he doesn't have any policies. He changes his policies every other day. Presumably, Donald Trump would say whatever his mafia people tell him to say or some fawning admirer. He reminds me of a child king. You know, I used to say this about George W. Bush, but it actually is even more appropriate for Donald Trump. I mean, George W. Bush at least had a father who knew something about public policy, and certainly he had advisors to go to. He would just do whatever Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld told him to say. Not necessarily good advisors. But Donald Trump really does remind me of the five-year-old that became king. You know, obviously in British history, or frankly, any monarchy's history, sometimes the king dies young. And when the king or queen dies young and leaves an heir who is under the age of 18, they are still king. They're still ruling. Now, usually what that means is that whoever is around that child is actually ruling, you know, whether it's French king or English king, the child gets to run around and wear a crown on his or her head. Usually it's a boy on his head and maybe a long cape. I'm sure he gets all the macaroni and cheese he can eat or whatever was appropriate in those days. And meanwhile, the people behind the throne, the unseen, unknown people are in charge. I'm quite confident that is what would happen if Donald Trump were to become president. He is, by the way, one of the most gullible people I've ever seen in public life. I can't think of anyone. I'm not just talking about politicians. Actually, I don't know that there's any politician more gullible than Donald Trump. Michelle Bachmann comes to mind, but even she was just gullible on some autism things, on vaccines and stuff. Donald Trump believes anything. You could tell him that Obama killed Kennedy, and he would spread that rumor as if it were true, even though Obama was two when Kennedy died. This is a guy who just loves spreading vicious rumors. He enjoys it. He's much like the National Enquirer, actually, although the National Enquirer is a lot more responsible than Donald Trump. The point is, in all of this, is that despite the fact that we have the single most reckless presidential candidate in American history, that's a pretty big charge, but I can't think of anyone more reckless who was a presidential nominee. I guess I'd have to go back to the 1840s and 50s with the Know Nothing Party, but that wasn't a major party. At that time, there was the Democrats and the Whigs. So, yeah, I mean, George Wallace was a third-party candidate. Pretty reckless. But in terms of the major two-party candidates, I think it's probably safe to say there hasn't been a more reckless presidential candidate in all of American history. By the way, there's never been a candidate, and I looked up. I went back all the way back to George Washington. I looked at every single one of the major party candidates, Republicans and Democrats, before that Democrats and Whigs, before that Federalists and Anti-Federalists, in all of American history. Not just every president, but every nominee for president had previously served in government. Did you know that? Either they were a general leading the U.S. Army, or they were a governor, senator, congressman. Maybe they served in the cabinet, secretary of state. But never before in all of American history has there ever been a nominee that hadn't at least some experience serving in government. If you don't believe me, check it out for yourself. Do the research. Go all the way back to George Washington. Even he served in government, and there was no United States before he was president. He was, of course, the general in charge of the Continental Forces. So given Donald Trump's incredible recklessness, I'm rarely at a loss for words, but when it comes to describing how awful a human being and a presidential candidate is, Donald Trump is, it's really hard to convey. Fascist might come to mind. Even that doesn't quite cut it. Demagogue is probably a better example. Authoritarian. Many think the Latin American example, Caudillo, one of those strong men, Evita's husband, Juan Perón, who kind of comes in democratically and then takes over the levers of power. Anyway, I don't have a word to describe how awful Donald Trump is. The question is, why isn't Hillary Clinton doing better? And a lot of Democrats are very nervous right now. The answer is, the polls right now, historically, and I'm going to give you an historical argument about this, are the worst polls at any time in a presidential campaign. In fact, if you go back and look decades, and Princeton professor Sam Wang has done this. He's got, by the way, a terrific election site. If you're an election geek like me and you really like to look at statistics and figures, the polls show going back to the 1970s, 1960s, that actually, if you take a poll in February, it is more reliable than a poll taken in June. The most reliable polls, obviously, are right before Election Day, and the most early reliable polls are taken in August, right after the presidential conventions. In fact, given that there's a sort of a halo effect around the conventions, generally who's ahead on Labor Day almost always wins the election. So be looking out for that Labor Day poll. Interestingly, though, after the Labor Day poll, the next most accurate poll that's earlier than Labor Day, obviously later is more important, but earlier than Labor Day is not June or May. It's actually the ones taken in February. The polls taken in February are more reliable than the polls taken in May or June. Even though that in February, obviously, the election is 9 months away instead of 6 months away. So why are they more reliable? Well, the answer is actually quite simple. The primaries drive normal partisans away from their party's nominee, particularly if it's a nasty partisan race. The clearest example of this, all we have to do is look back 8 years. In 2008, John McCain was chosen by Republicans long before President Obama, then Senator Obama, was chosen by Democrats. You may recall it was a very, very tight race between then-Senators Obama and Clinton. Very tight race, much, much tighter than the Clinton-Sanders race. Indeed, she at one point was within 60 delegates of Obama, pledged delegates, and even into the final primary was well under 100 in terms of the margin of difference. And I'm talking about pledged delegates here, not the superdelegates. And in fact, if you look at the Obama-Clinton 2008 race, you'll find that because she was good in primary states while he was good in caucus states, and that, by the way, is similar to her and Sanders, primary, neither one gets too many voters out there, unfortunately. Maybe only 10-15% of people vote in primaries or caucuses. But primaries get 10-15% of voters. Caucuses get like 2% of voters. Primaries are more democratic. Caucuses tend to reward only the extreme loyal party faithful, the ones who are willing to sit for 4 hours on a Saturday and get child care and have the time to do that rather than just go in and cast a vote. It's one of the reasons why I think all states should have primaries. I am not a caucus fan. But because Hillary had won the primaries against Obama and he won the caucuses, even though he had more pledged delegates in 2008, she had more votes. More Democrats in 2008 voted for Hillary Clinton than Barack Obama. Nonetheless, he won the nomination. So Hillary Clinton supporters in 2008 thought the system was rigged. It was rigged in that the states where there were many states that she won and Barack Obama nevertheless won more delegates than she did to the national convention because of the arcane procedure of the DNC. And I, by the way, I'm all for reforming that arcane procedure to make it more open and transparent. Again, I would have primaries in every state. I only live in Virginia, and we have a primary here, so I can't really speak for the other states. The point is that because Hillary Clinton won the popular vote in 2008, barely lost the pledged delegate vote by 50 or 100 delegates rather than the 300 delegates or so Bernie Sanders is behind, a number of Hillary supporters did not want to support Obama any which way. They started something called PUMA. Do you remember PUMA in 2008? It stands for Party Unity My... I think I actually can say this word on the radio, but I choose not to. My rear end. Begins with an A. Three letters. You got it. Party Unity My... Yeah. That's how much they felt in Party Unity. They were very angry. I actually had some friends who were PUMA people. Strong supporters of Hillary in 2008. Did not want to go to Obama, who they felt had stolen the election, the primary process. Then the economy collapsed. John McCain showed he couldn't deal with it in any way. And the vast, vast majority of Hillary Clinton voters came to recognize that even though they much preferred Hillary over the untried Senator Barack Obama, he's better than McCain. And so even my most determined, stubborn friends, particularly after McCain chose Palin, said, yeah, they preferred Hillary, but they were going to vote for Barack Obama. I'm very confident the exact same thing will happen this year around. That the reason why Hillary Clinton's polls are low now and are not to be trusted is because the race isn't over yet. Bernie Sanders is still fighting. There's still a very major primary in June in California, New Jersey, and some other small states, Montana, South Dakota, etc. In 2 weeks, though, I think Bernie Sanders is going to endorse Hillary Clinton, and then we can come together as a party. Toll-free number, 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back, right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Ready. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. The primaries are drawing to a close. The very last states will vote a week from tomorrow. Week from yesterday. Less than 1 week. 1 week from today. Every state will have voted in the Democrat-Republican primaries. There is one exception. It's the place where I'm sitting. It is the District of Columbia, which is not a state, which is why what I said is true. Every state will have voted. The District of Columbia has its Democratic primary on June 14th. That would be a week later. Given the demographics of the District of Columbia, it will be a very good state for a good district, good voting, good place for Hillary Clinton to pick up some more delegates. The big enchilada, of course, is California, although New Jersey is pretty big, too. New Jersey would be a huge state if it weren't for California on the same day, this Tuesday, choosing their candidates, along with caucuses in Montana and South Dakota and New Mexico. Actually, I think Montana and South Dakota are primaries. New Mexico is a caucus. Those are much smaller states. I think Hillary Clinton's going to win New Jersey and California, actually. She may not win some of the smaller states. We talked about the fact that the caucuses are tough. Bernie Sanders also tends to do well for weird reasons. We should talk about that. For weird reasons in rural, very white states like South Dakota and Montana. I think part of the reason actually has to do with Republicans messing up the system. Fascinating poll in West Virginia got very little coverage. We all know that Bernie Sanders won by a landslide in West Virginia. People said it's because of comments Hillary Clinton made about coal. And I forget the exact numbers, but they were something like 59 to 36. I mean, that's a thumping. That's a 23-point victory. That's a massive victory. But here's the part they never told you about West Virginia. They took a poll of all the voters, and they looked at all the Sanders voters, and they asked the Sanders voters, who would you prefer in a Trump-Clinton race? And a third said Trump. Well, that looks really scary. But then they asked those same Sanders voters, who would you prefer in a Trump-Sanders race? And they still were going to vote for Trump. One third of Sanders' support in West Virginia were not Democrats. They were Trump supporters who came into the West Virginia primary, which is an open primary, one of the reasons why I'm wary of open primaries, and just decided to muck up our race. The Republican race was over. They figured they couldn't have an impact in the Republican race. They could sure have an impact in the Democratic one. They would vote against the person who they thought was the most likely nominee, Hillary. And that's exactly what they did. What's fascinating is if you remove that one-third from the Sanders support, the 59-36 or so, remove the one-third, and I did the math before, Hillary actually wins. She actually wins the West Virginia primary. But it's close, but she wins. The point is that all of these primaries and caucuses have to be taken with a grain of salt. And I do think the voters on June 7th will finally end the process and let us unify. Next up, I want to talk about the Libertarian candidates for president. We'll get right to them after the break.
Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will not be the only candidates on the ballot in November. The Libertarian Party will be on the ballot in all 50 states. And this is not your crazy uncle's Libertarian Party. This is a party with two very well-respected former governors in the mix. These aren't, you know, Looney Tunes. Gary Johnson's the former Republican governor of New Mexico, and his vice presidential pick, William Weld, is the former governor of Massachusetts. So these aren't off-the-wall candidates. Massachusetts and New Mexico are much bigger states, for example, than Alaska, to which Sarah Palin had only been governor for a couple years. Weld and Johnson were fairly popular in their states. And there are a lot of libertarian issues that libertarians care strongly about. Everything from marijuana legalization, which I support, to reducing restrictions on guns, which I don't support. But they're even a little more, shall we say, conventional than their party. Even though many libertarians, for example, do not believe that people should be licensed to drive cars, because they're against any kind of government licensing scheme, their candidate, Gary Johnson, said, no, we need driver's licenses for cars. Here's my bold prediction. Even though the Libertarian Party has never gotten more than 1% in any national election since its founding, I predict they're going to get a lot more this year. I say at least 2%. Arguably 3 to 5%. This, I think, will be the biggest year for a third-party candidate since Ross Perot in the 1990s. I actually think they'll do better than Ralph Nader did in 2000, which means they could sway a bunch of races. Why would they do so well? Well, I think they will pick up a lot of the Never Trump movement. The Republicans who can't pull the lever for a Democrat, can't pull the lever for Hillary Clinton, but know in their heart of hearts that electing Donald Trump would be an absolutely catastrophic occurrence for America. And so can vote for two respected governors who occupy a different area of the spectrum. And I actually think they're going to get a lot of votes. So what are libertarians? Many of us know, but let's do a quick refresher. Democrats would tell you that the government should stay out of regulating our private lives, but should play a role in helping us in our public lives, helping us get a job, helping us with health care, helping us have schools, and so forth. They believe that government can help, through tax money, help us achieve some version of the American dream with education and jobs and health care. But should stay out of our private lives, shouldn't tell us what to do with our bodies or what religion to practice, shouldn't censor our books, shouldn't tell us who to marry, for example. So Democrats are socially liberal, and they're fiscally liberal. Now, Republicans are, of course, the opposite on both counts. Republicans believe that government should tell you how to live your private lives. They do believe in censorship. They do believe in government-sponsored religion. It is always up to Republicans to insist that they put prayer in places, specifically a kind of prayer that they write. They believe God should be decided by the government, notwithstanding the First Amendment. They believe that private schools should be funded by the government. They believe that government should fund all kinds of religious institutions. Use your taxpayer funds to fund some religion you don't believe in. That's the Republican way. They believe in censoring books, particularly sex education. They believe in regulating bathrooms, looking to see which bathroom you go into to see whether it's the right one or the wrong one. And they fervently believe in controlling what you put in your own body, whether it be marijuana or cigarettes, or whether or not a woman has an abortion. It's Republicans that intimately want to decide your most private decisions, whether or not you should have sex, who you should have sex with, whether or not you can marry the person you love, whether or not you can get contraception. Republicans would regulate all these very, very personal things. But they wouldn't regulate in the public sphere, right? Republicans are opposed to the minimum wage. If you can't earn enough to live, tough. If you can't earn enough to eat, tough. If you can't get health care, tough. Republicans notoriously oppose Social Security, oppose Medicare. Republicans are all for having polluters dump all kinds of waste in our rivers. They don't want to regulate the air or the water. If it's dirty, don't drink it, they would tell you. They don't want to regulate whether corporations take jobs abroad. They don't want to help the economy at all. They want to help major corporations. So they are fiscally conservative and socially conservative. They want to control your private lives, but they don't want to help you get a job or health care or an education. They notoriously want to cut all those things. Libertarians split the baby. They don't want government involved in your private life. And in that way, they agree with Democrats. Libertarians tend to want to legalize marijuana. Libertarians tend to want to let gay families leave them alone. They don't want to regulate your sex lives. They don't want to tell you what to do with your own body. Libertarians don't want government funding religion. On that score, they agree with Democrats. But they agree with Republicans in the public sphere. They don't want government funding schools or health care. They don't want government protecting the environment. They don't want government playing a role to help the economy get better. They say, like Republicans, that the government should stay out of the economy, stay out of education, stay out of healthcare, stay out of the environment. In fact, but libertarians would also say, stay out of their private lives, too. Don't tell us what God to believe in. Don't tell us what to do with our own bodies. So they split the baby. They agree with Democrats about no government regulation in our private individual liberties, but they agree with Republicans when it comes to no government regulation whatsoever in helping people achieve the American dream. And actually, they agree with the Republicans on guns. The one place where liberals tend to favor some government regulation in your private life is with guns, because most people recognize that a gun is not like marijuana, something you ingest yourself. A gun is almost always pointed outward. Now, sometimes it's pointed inward. After all, we get some 20,000 suicides a year based on guns. But a gun can hurt people. If you smoke marijuana, you're mostly hurting yourself, okay? If you shoot a gun wildly, you can very easily kill others. So Democrats would regulate things like guns and cars because they can kill people. But they'd let you make your own private decisions on health care and so forth. Well, libertarians will tell you no government regulation of any kind whatsoever. And I think that's going to appeal to a certain segment of Republicans who would otherwise support Trump. I think the libertarian candidates are going to do quite well this season. And I got to tell you, I respect Governor Johnson and Governor Wild. I do. I don't agree with them, but I respect them. I think they're intelligent people. I don't think they want to tear the country down. I think they want to, in their own libertarian way, make the country better. It'll be fascinating to see whether the Koch brothers or others that have run away from Donald Trump, including Bush Jr., Bush Sr., Jeb Bush, including Paul Ryan, might want to consider endorsing the libertarian ticket. Because I'm willing to guess, I'm going to make my bold prediction right now. Libertarians in November will get at least 2% of the vote, even though they've never gotten higher than 1% before. They'll get at least 2, and they might get as high as 5, which would be the record for the Libertarian Party. Toll-free number, 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to an old friend of mine, Dave, in Humboldt County on line 1. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Oh, really great, Mark. Good to be hearing you. I think in a lot of ways there's some credibility, real credibility, with the libertarians. I believe they have arrived at a conclusion that I do kind of share, and that is that both of the major parties have, in so many ways, turned corrupt, have sold out to the big Wall Street corporate special interests. Now, I know that you are an active Democrat, a candidate, an office holder. And so I can say things that probably you can't say, because I think right now, if you're an active Democrat and you want to stay one, and that's the way to get elected and move up, you can't expose what I know to be real.
Well, hang on. Let me just say this, Dave, before you move on. I want to tell you that I have never taken a penny from any Wall Street firm, not none. I will tell you, though, and here I may agree with you, that the way our system of campaign financing is set up, it's not public financing, which I know you support, Dave, which I support. There is a huge temptation for people of any party. And by the way, it's not just Democrats and Republicans. It's libertarians, too. They're going to be seeking the Koch brother money, for example. But there's a tremendous temptation to take money from very rich people, because that's how our campaigns are funded. And I hate that whole system. So to the extent that you're telling me both parties are corrupt, I have to say, number three, the Libertarian Party is corrupt, too, in that regard. And number four, it's not so much that the parties are corrupt. It's that the system, as it's designed, breeds corruption. And that's why I want to get rid of Citizens United, and I want public financing. But the Democrats and Republicans that just are really just using the system as it currently exists, a bad system, rather than, I think, you know, I don't think it's the Democrats' fault the system is the way it is, because most Democrats I know oppose Citizens United and want to change the system. But you're absolutely right, Dave. They do use the system as it currently exists right now. And if they didn't, I think Russ Feingold is a classic example in Wisconsin. Did not take a single cent from a corporation or a lobbyist, and even though he's quite popular in Wisconsin, lost in a narrow race because he didn't have enough money a few years back, and that scared a lot of Democrats. But go ahead, finish your point, Dave.
Well, I believe you're an honest man, Mark. I've come to conclude that over a lot of years, and I think you want government to do some good for the people, and I think on that count, you are clearly in bed with one other prime candidate in this country, and you know who it is. One candidate right now who is out to do good and will not take money from big corporate special interests.
Well, you talk about Bernie Sanders, of course.
I didn't even have to give you 20 guesses.
And I'm quite confident that you're going to vote for Bernie in the California primary on Tuesday. And good for you. I think that's great. I think Bernie Sanders has invigorated the Democratic Party. I think he's reminded us of our principles. I think he's moved Hillary to the left successfully. And I think he will keep pressure on her. I do think she'll be the nominee. But I think he'll keep pressure on her all the way to November to remember, you know, she's opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to keep up the minimum wage. She's now said not only that she supports $12 nationally, but she supports localities, including some in California, being able to raise it to $15. She's not as far left as Bernie. I will concede that point. But I also think it's wrong to suggest that she's not that liberal. I was looking at analysis of votes in the Senate for Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden when they were all in the Senate together. And this is analysis that I think will interest a number of people. There were 51 senators at the time they were all Democratic senators at the time they were all there. The single most liberal senator in the entire United States Congress was Bernie Sanders. He was number one. That's true. Hillary Clinton, interestingly, was number 11, still in the top 20% of all Democrats. She was more liberal than 40 other Democrats. Clocking in at number 23 was Barack Obama. Interestingly, Obama was not as far to the left as Hillary. He was 10 points further down. 10 points down from Obama was Joe Biden. Joe Biden, in fact, his number, he was 33rd, but his median score, if you look at the statistics, liberal conservative score, was right in the middle of the Democratic Party. In other words, half the Democrats voted more conservatively than Joe Biden and half voted more liberally than Joe Biden. Joe Biden was right in the middle. Barack Obama was 10 senators better than Biden. Hillary Clinton was 12 senators better than Barack Obama. And you're absolutely right. The furthest left was Bernie Sanders. And I say this not to in any way doubt that Bernie Sanders is more liberal than Hillary Clinton. He is, no question. But she's still pretty damn liberal, and she's fought for a lot of causes like paid family and medical leave, for women's equal pay. She's fought damn hard, and I don't want anyone not calling Hillary a liberal. She's a liberal, even if Bernie Sanders is more liberal than she is.
I think there is that aspect of Hillary, but I am convinced now from direct inside first-hand information, and I shared it with you, that big corporate special interests flood money into both the Democrat and Republican parties. The Republicans are the worst, I will admit, but the Democrats should be calling themselves the almost just as bad party, because they, too, take the big money from corporations that are only in the business of what's in it for them and to hell with the people.
See, Dave, they do take the money. I agree with you, but they take the money because that's our current system. And the very, very few Democrats that are pure often find it harms their electoral viability. And again, my clearest example is Russ Feingold in Wisconsin. Bernie Sanders has the luxury of running in one of the most liberal states in the United States, which has a tiny population. Vermont has fewer people in its entire state than we have in the District of Columbia. Or maybe it's close to the same number. I know they're both under a million. It's a tiny population that... So again, I would change the system. I would change the system, but I can't complain too much about Democrats that play by the current system as long as it exists until we change it. Got to take a break, though. I'll give you more time after the break. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just a few minutes left. By the way, I've posted a poll on my Twitter feed. My Twitter is at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. Would you consider voting for the Libertarian Party candidate? And just a few votes in, but already 18% say yes. That's huge for a third party candidate. You can vote it at Mark Levine Talk, and I'll announce them at the end. Dave, wrap it up real quick, because I got another caller on the line I want to get to before we hang up.
Okay, well then I won't take any more time. I always like to say, no faith in electronic voting. We got to get around that somewhere, and you're trying. Thank you for that.
My pleasure, and as I said, due to some work I did in Virginia, it'll be gone, at least in Virginia, in 2020. If you still have it in your state, listen to Dave and write your local state representative, and please get rid of any kind of voting without a paper record. All right, Paul in New Mexico, line two, the floor is yours.
Hey, Mark, loved your show. I've got, like, three quick points.
Okay, hurry, because I got 3 quick minutes. I got 3 minutes, so go.
Yeah, okay. The biggest problem with Hillary, and it may not be Hillary personally or her campaign, it's the establishment, the Democratic establishment, the DNC under Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And listen, she, under her leadership, we've lost the House of Representatives, we have lost the Senate, and she will prove to lose the White House. Because I guarantee you, this is an anti-establishment year, and is heinous as Donald Trump is, I'm afraid he's going to win.
Okay, let me quickly respond, and then I know you want to get to your other 2 points. I don't think we're going to lose the White House. I think Hillary is – I still think she's going to win in a landslide. I don't want to be complacent, and we're going to fight hard, and I'll be fighting all the way in November, but I think it's hers to lose. As for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, there are some legitimate complaints against her, mostly about the debates. I haven't really heard any others. I don't think it's fair to blame the superdelegates on her. That was a system that was in place, for 30 or 40 years, and I don't think that's fair. But she may well be replaced, and if she is, she is. I don't think, though, that she has quite as much power as people give some credit to her. You got 2 other points, Paul. Go ahead. Oh, his line dropped. Well, Paul, I was going to give you time to make all your points. All right. Well, I got a minute left. If you want to vote in the Libertarian poll, or Paul wants to call back, though, you really only have a minute, so not much time. At Mark Levine Talk, this gives me a chance just to remind you folks that even though I'm only around Mondays and Wednesdays these days, you can find out a lot more about me at marklevinetalk.com. That's my website, MarkLevineTalk.com. Sometimes when you Google me, you get Mark Levin, who's an awful right-wing radio talk show host, and I assure you, he is not me. He and I don't look alike, talk alike, and God knows we don't think alike. If you ever want to remember the difference between him and me, it's very simple. My name is Levine. His name is Levin. I have that second E in my last name. It stands for empathy. I like to think I've got some empathy for people all across the country. I think Mark Levin lacks that empathy. So never confuse us. But please, leave a comment anytime. MarkLevineTalk.com. Go to my Twitter feed at MarkLevineTalk. Let me know what you think. And by the way, at the end, with all the votes in, still 18% of you said you would consider voting for a Libertarian candidate. Mark my words. I think Gary Johnson and William Weld, they haven't been talked about much. I think they're going to have a big impact this fall. This is Mark Levine, and again, check out my website and Twitter feed. I will be back next week on Monday.